Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, what an honor to have you in the studio. You're the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society, 700-plus degreed scientist, advanced degreed scientist, and so many normal Joes like me, members who love to study science and see how it affirms the Bible, God's Word.
That's right. It's a great organization, and their website is creationresearch.org.
Fred, you and I have started in the last Real Science Friday going through this Creation magazine, the September through November 2008 edition. It's a beautiful magazine, just like the Answers magazine from Answers in Genesis here in the U.S., Ken Ham's group. This happens to be out of Australia. It's called Creation.
And it's been in publication for quite a long time. It's really the first Creation magazine that I know of, and it's very well done. Creationontheweb.com is the website.
Mm-hmm.
There's an article about plants that have a dimmer switch, which is kind of cool because, you know, when you buy a house, your wife makes you put in a dimmer switch, whereas these plants came with them.
Yeah, that's right. They came with dimmer switches, and that's because plants take sunlight and through a process called photosynthesis, which is wildly sophisticated, they turn it into usable energy and matter for plants to form. And there is this potential problem where if you have a system that harvests sunlight, you might absorb too much solar energy, and that could harm, it could damage the system.
So therefore, there needs to be some kind of design in place to block this light. Not block it completely, but in this case, it's, again, a dimmer switch. One researcher explained, and this is quoting the article, "This defense mechanism is so sensitive to changing light conditions, it will even respond to the passing of clouds overhead." I mean, this is an incredibly complex system. The chemical pathways are just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and, you know, we've been researching plants for decades. The sophistication still astounds the researchers. And I mentioned photosynthesis. The plants, the sunlight is energy, but the plants convert sunlight into carbohydrates, which are energy-rich, and they use those. And this is such an extraordinary system that God has made for us, the ecosystem with the sun, the life-giving energy from the sun, and the fact that animals can eat plants. I mean, just that is an extraordinary thing, that animals can eat plants. I mean, it could be that plants could be all poisonous to animals, but it God did such an awesome job, and so plants have dimmer switches. My boys and I, just a few days ago, we were out in the sun with visitors, another family from out of town, and it was a hot, sunny day, and we walked under a shade tree, and I asked the kids, "Where's all the heat? I mean, 10 feet away, it's as hot as could be. Under here, it's nice and cool." And one of our boys said, "Well, the heat's up in the tree. The tree's absorbing the heat for us." And it's true. I mean, God did an awesome job.
So are trees part of the problem of global warming?
Yeah, they must be. Right. In fact, remember Ronald Reagan said forests produced particulate matter, and like the fog over Denver, the brown cloud, a lot of that comes from trees. And the evolutionists, the liberals mocked him. But of course, that was true. Downwind from forests, you have a lot more particulate matter in the air.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so that's one pretty cool article. I like this one about people who believe in God. And this comes from England and the Royal Economic Society. And I have a hard time believing they're...
I don't think there's a lot of creationists in that group. Do you, Bob?
Evangelicals, fundamentalists, Bible-believing. I doubt it. But anyway, they said that people who believe in God, based on their research, are happier than atheists and happier than agnostics. And they're saying quite a bit happier.
Well, that's no surprise to us. I mean, if you've got a faith in Jesus and you have a hope for eternity, you're going to have a different attitude than if your hope is based on you're here, you're going to go away, and you never exist again.
Right.
And there's no purpose. you know, be happy, you know, try to be happy now for tomorrow you die and you're gone forever. Mm-hmm. So what you said something earlier, Bob, that I thought was funny. What's the purpose of atheists?
Oh, atheists have no purpose other than annoying Christians. That's their only real purpose. And so what a tragedy to live in that kind of despair, which is only just once removed from their conscious mind, because everything will come to nothing. And whether you are a great philanthropist or if you're a mass murderer, you torture kids and bury them alive, what's the difference? The kids will be dead. You'll be dead. Everybody will be dead. The sun will supernova and it's all over. That's not what our existence is about. We were made in the image and likeness of God, and the Bible says God put eternity in our hearts.
That's right. And if you have that worldview where you don't believe in a God, then all kinds of disastrous things happen, like millions of people being murdered by Stalin and Hitler and Mao Zedong. All these guys had a worldview of evolution. In fact, Mao Zedong mandated the reading of Darwin. Stalin, again, was a big fan. The kids at Columbine were steeped in evolutionary belief.
That's right. Natural selection. And in fact, one of our local papers on their front page said, well, Eric Harris' T-shirt said natural selection when he committed his murders, but we don't know what that phrase referred to. Just unbelievable. The Nazis, the National Socialists, they were Darwinists.
Pol Pot and all the people he killed in Cambodia, what was it, about a third of the population, they were all steeped in evolutionary worldview. This view has consequences when you believe such things.
Adolf Hitler, of course, accepted and promoted these views, and Charles Darwin himself was a racist. And so, real tragedy. But the researchers go on to suggest that people who believe in God are better able to cope with difficulty, disappointment, and tragedy. And that's true. And Jesus in the Beatitudes, blessed are those who, and then fill in the blank, all the wonderful things that believers will do responding to God's love, blessed or happy, happy. So yeah, they're right. And not only that, you know that country western song, Fred, lovers live longer. I mean, married people live about 10 years longer than guys who are going to bars every weekend looking for somebody to fill in the loneliness. I mean, not everyone needs to be married, and God made us, and we have gifts, and some people be married, other people have a gift to be single and perfectly fulfilled, and that's great. But most people are made to be married, to have a helpmeet, to complement them. And I need somebody to compliment me a few times a day. But Fred, so God made us, and when we acknowledge him as our creator, we function better.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, you know, this worldview of evolution is a worldview of death. Ours is a worldview of life. And God said, you know, he set before us life and death. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so this kind of, it's interesting because you'd said, well, you know, these guys got to be evolutionists. Well, we have pretty good evidence that they probably were, because right now, Bob, statistics are showing that 4% of people in the United Kingdom go to church now. It used to be 50% in the 50s. Well, things have steadily gone downhill. There's roughly, if you use the typical numbers that population geneticists use of a generation of 20 years, after three generations, they've gone from 50% of the population going to church to 4%. And if you use the math on that, it's about 75% each generation are leaving the church, which matches a study that has been done recently that shows that about 75% of the church youth in our country are leaving the faith. And the number one reason they give is intellectual skepticism. And so if anybody's out there wondering why, you know, what's the big deal about creation, this gets to the heart of it. Why is it important? It's because we're losing our youth, and it's because of things like the teaching of evolution that puts doubts in their minds about the validity of the Bible, especially Genesis, and it makes them question, well, hey, if I can't trust the history in Genesis, why should I trust the history of the resurrection?
Right.
So there's another article in here, again, about talks about the Christians dying off in the United Kingdom. And it says, the report says that active Muslims will outnumber regular churchgoers within a generation, with Hindus not far behind.
In the United Kingdom?
Yes.
Now, I went to public school. Or is that in Disney World in Florida? United Kingdom next to Epcot Center? Oh, yeah, that's the Magic Kingdom. United Kingdom, that's England. That's England across the Atlantic. That's right, where London is. And then Scotland and, okay, I get it, Ireland.
And Winston Churchill and Queen.
All that. And C.S. Lewis.
Oh, that's right.
And the Anglicans, who are, you know, the Archbishop of Canterbury over there, he's a bit messed up. Remember, he said that the virgin birth is not true just this past Christmas, and there were no, you know, three wise men. And the number three, there were magi bearing gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But he just, you know, he hates God, which makes sense. He's the head of a major institutionalized Christianity. But he also said recently that he thinks that aspects of Islamic law will be in British law and that it's unavoidable. He was talking about Sharia law, which is just so bizarre. You know, in Saudi Arabia, women can't drive and women can't go to school and like under the Taliban. And so Christianity was a foundation of dignity for women in the world, Christianity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Roman Empire, women were not allowed to testify if they witnessed a crime because their testimony was thought to be nothing. They were valued like property. And Christianity exploded in Europe because of the teaching, for example, the Apostle Paul, that men should love their wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. I mean, that was unheard of.
That's right, and we're all equal in God's eyes. Mm-hmm. That's really unheard of if you look at all the other religions, you know, Mormonism, for example, where, you know, a man can take multiple wives, like Brigham Young did and Joseph Smith.
Yeah.
And then Islam, where how many wives does Osama bin Laden have?
Yeah. Now, of course, back in early biblical history, in the early centuries after the flood, for example, men did have multiple wives. And I think God allowed that for reasons because the women would just die. They simply couldn't survive. But by the time you get to the New Testament, the standard was one wife, one man. And that's the way it would have been before the fall when God created and we had a paradise and Adam and Eve. But then the fall and sin and the destruction of the world through the global flood. So in England, there's been a complete rebellion against the Judeo-Christian worldview. In fact, Prince Charles, who's supposed to succeed the Queen as the head of the Church of England, and that's just a little weird, I'm sorry, but Prince Charles said one of his titles is supposed to be Defender of the Faith, and he has said, I don't want that title. I want Defender of Faith.
Oh, man.
Not Defender of the Faith. That implies that something is true. And these guys.
And unfortunately, this is sweeping through Europe, you know, this this turning away from the Bible. I mean, there was that one church in France where the pastor said he no longer believed in the resurrection. Mm. And so the head of that church organization was going to kick him out of the church, but his parish rebelled and supported their pastor. They didn't like the idea that he was going to get kicked out. Even though he said that Christianity wasn't true, they still wanted him as a pastor.
Yeah, and the Arvada United Methodist Church, my boys went to their Easter sunrise service a few years ago, and the pastor said the most embarrassing thing in the Bible is that it says Jesus rose from the dead. That was the Arvada United Methodist Church. Hmm. So,
speaking of the United Methodists, or the Methodists in general,
yeah,
the next article talks about them.
A startling, startling apology from the Methodist Church to the victims of eugenics. This is startling, Fred. I can't even believe my eyes as I read this.
Yeah, this was a surprising article. This is definitely something I wasn't aware of.
The United Methodist Church is wicked. But obviously, they have an influence in there that's trying to expose some of the seeds of racism and trying to acknowledge their guilt in supporting eugenics from before World War II and before the Nazis. And so they issued a resolution apologizing Methodist leaders and Methodist bodies who supported eugenics as sound science and sound theology, and they've now apologized.
Yeah, it's interesting. They have a quote published that was published in one of their sermons back in 1929 where they argued that the strongest and the best are selected for the task of propagating the likeness of God and carrying on his work of improving the race.
That is just
blasphemous.
Yeah, it is, and it's direct racism, and more children from the fit, fewer from the unfit. And that's how society looks down at blacks, Jews, and whoever happens to be, you know, the enemy du jour. And so their resolution recognized that eugenics did not begin with Hitler or not even with German scientists, but it was first promoted in England by Charles Darwin's family.
That's right, his cousin, Sir Francis Galton.
Who we know that name well, Sir Francis Galton, a proponent of Darwinism, evolution.
He was the founder of the Eugenics Society.
So Charles Darwin's cousin was the founder of the Eugenics Society, and who was the second in line president?
He was succeeded by Darwin's son, Leonard Darwin.
Leonard Darwin. So Darwin's cousin used this concept of Darwinism to found the Eugenics Society, and he was succeeded by Charles Darwin's own son. And what the Nazis did was they simply applied Darwinism to human beings.
That's right. And, you know, it just formed this horrible practice of eugenics. I'm really surprised that, well, maybe I shouldn't be surprised with as liberal as they are today and some things don't change under the sun. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just again, what worldviews, the consequences they can lead to when you have this worldview of evolution and millions of years of death, disease, and suffering and natural selection, mm-hmm. you know, survival of the fittest and the kind of crazy ideas that man comes up with.
When you have the chance to purchase the Expel DVD, Ben Stein's DVD, when the extended edition comes out, please get it. And you could see actual newsreel footage from the Nazis back in the late 30s, early 40s, when they were showing mentally retarded people and saying that who were cared for by doctors and loving family members. And they say, we have been doing natural selection a disservice. We have interfered with the laws of nature. These misfits should not be allowed to breed. And it's not much of a step from saying, these people can't breed, to they can't marry, to they can't live.
That's right. They take it, to the point of death.
It's pretty easy to get there.
There is a Dr. Christine Rosen wrote a book about related to this topic of eugenics, and she said it was the liberal, Bible-rejecting, pro-evolution churches, such as the Methodist Church, that that promoted eugenics, while those who clung stubbornly to tradition, to doctrine, and to biblical infallibility opposed eugenics.
Yeah, so this Dr. Christine Rosen, Preaching Genetics, this is an Oxford University book from 2004. This is rather startling also, that this acknowledgement that the churches who believed in biblical infallibility, you know, the fundamentalists, the evangelicals, the people that the world hates, that those people staunchly opposed eugenics. And it was the liberal churches that rejected the Bible, that believed in evolution, that embraced eugenics. Of course they did, like Planned Parenthood, for example.
Exactly. And you know, who was proven right? The people who have their foundation on the Bible. And for some reason right now, it reminded me of this whole debate between adult stem cells and embryonic stem cells. What's it going to be 20 years from now? Are churches going to have to apologize to liberal churches that supported embryonic stem cells? Right now, we know that they don't work. They cause tumors and other kinds of cancers, whereas adult stem cells, they got a running tally. The last I saw was 72 useful cures or remedies to zero. 72 to zero. Adult stem cells, 72. Embryonic stem cells, zero. Mm. But again, it's us Bible-believing Christians who know that using embryonic stem cells is wrong, and God has made it to where they're not useful, which is interesting in itself. I mean, that's what science is showing. And, you know, they're wrong about eugenics, they're wrong about embryonic stem cells, they're wrong about anything that holds itself against the Bible.
Mm-hmm. And so this is very encouraging, actually, that Christians are getting the message out that it's wrong to kill a fertilized human being. At that moment of fertilization, that's when it's a precious new human being. And that's what the pictures of the snowflake kids do. You see these kids who are adopted as frozen embryos. They're little snowflakes, frozen specks. And here they're adopted years later, implanted in a loving mom. And here's this child who's so precious, but the biological child of the earlier mother and father. Not the adopted parents, They're the ones who are loving and caring for this child. But the biological parents are long removed. And it's the kid. He has her eyes and his chin, you know? He was that child all in those months and years in that freezer.
That's right.
Wow.
So the title of this article is Methodist Church Apology for Eugenics. And I was telling Bob before the show, hopefully in 20 years we'll see something similar that says Methodist Church Apology for Evolution.
For evolution. Evolution, which causes people to treat others like animals. Because if we're animals...
Yeah, so why are we surprised when kids act like animals when we tell them they're animals and things like Columbine happen?
Yeah, dolphins will gang rape one another. Animals will eat their own young. They'll eat each other. Animals will eat other animals alive. They'll start chewing them while they're still alive. That's animals.
That's right.
And when you tell young people that they are animals and there's no judgment day before God, we had no creator, you know, kids will figure out what the expectations are for them. And our public schools are child sex advocates. We have administrators who I think get sexually excited to think about the students having sex. They advocate sex between the kids. They think it's fine. They say, hey, kids will be kids. You know, what do you expect? They've been doing it for a million years. No, they haven't. They haven't. And in your school, they do it because you're despicable. You expect them. You're a child sex advocate. So pretty cool that they've apologized for their role in promoting eugenics.
That's, yes, very good.
United Methodist Church. How about to change topics? The next article, and that's what I love about these Creation magazines, Answers Magazine, the Journal of Creation. There's such a diversity of topics.
Yeah, the variety of articles.
The very next article is about Saturn's rings, and there's a stunning discovery. Fred, could you tell us about that, Fred Williams?
Well, sure. They discovered it's a planet. Okay, just kidding. They discovered it has a moon that has rings around it. So, you know, scientists for a long time have had problems with the rings around Saturn because they know that they can't have been there for very long. I mean, we can go into a lot of technical reasons. One of them is, you know, they discovered how the rings are breaking up and crashing into the Saturn surface. You know, they're vaporizing into water.
So they know that the rings are relatively young.
Yeah, so they come up with goofy ideas of how they got there.
Which, if Saturn and our solar system is 4 billion years old, you shouldn't have rings that can only last a few million years. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, and they can't explain how they got there.
And there's so many features of the solar system that are like that. Things that, like comets, that should only last tens of thousands of years. They should be gone, and the sky's full of them.
Full of them, and so they have to invent things like the Oort cloud that's never been observed that they postulate is somehow, you know, spitting these comets out every so often.
Yeah, and they have to say, oh, well, the boulders in Saturn's rings were really way bigger. But if that's the case,
well, there's a recent article. In fact, it was just a week ago in New Scientist that this group from CU, from Colorado University, did a simulation of based on data they got from a satellite that's been near these Saturn rings. And they said, well, the boulders had to be much bigger. The particles that form the rings are actually much bigger, and that'll help them be millions of years older, maybe up to 100 million years. Well, there's a scientist from NASA said, okay, well, that's all fine and good, but really that doesn't work with the physics because basically the momentum from the rings to the moons would push the moons outward and slow down the ring particles. Mm-hmm. So basically the moons should be a lot farther away than they are from Jupiter and Saturn. So again, you've got a problem where they try to explain it, but it doesn't match the physics. And it reminds me, Bob, of the moon and that famous quote in Nature magazine about how the scientist was he was being tongue-in-cheek. He said, the moon, the reason for the moon is observational error. It doesn't exist.
The moon doesn't exist because they do a rundown of all the different theories for how the moon got there. I mean,
none of them work.
None of them work. That's why there's five major theories, because they're all lousy. Which one is the worst? They can't figure that out, so there's five of them. And none of them work. None of them describe the moon in its perfect distance and its beautiful circular orbit, and it's just perfect. And so how could it be there? Well, he was joking. He said the best explanation for the moon is observational error. It doesn't exist. And that is funny, but it makes quite the point. The scientists who believe in the Big Bang, they can't explain why the moon is there. You think they could explain why the sun is there? They don't know why the sun is there, or other suns, or galaxies, or the universe.
Well, later in this magazine, there's an article about Saturn, and it's the fact that it's a hydrogen planet, basically. You could set, if you had a bathtub big enough to hold Saturn, Saturn would sit on top of the water.
It would float. It would float in the oceans
and
of the Earth.
And it doesn't match their theories of how the galaxies formed. And so I've got a quote in this Creation magazine from an evolutionary scientist. He said, "For scientists who spend time thinking about how planets form, life would be simpler if gas giants like Jupiter and Saturn didn't exist." Kind of like that, you know, quote about the moon doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that quote was from space.com, if I recall. And so, yeah, it'd be easier if the gas giants' planets did not exist, because their theories of how these planets would form, they don't work. And they don't work in so many extraordinary ways.
God constantly thwarts a naturalistic explanation. It never ceases to amaze me how these things pop up that they just can't explain.
Yeah, and so you have, okay, how'd the moon get there? We don't know. Well, the Big Bang says it all came from an initial explosion. You ask the Big Bang experts, well, what came first, stars or galaxies? Which formed first? I have it from the guy who was the editor of Nature magazine for about 30 years, editor-in-chief. He said, we don't know. We don't know. Big Bang theorists don't know whether the stars or the galaxies came first. Now, that's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? They don't know. They can't figure it out. It's all too bizarre. There was a creator God who made us. And don't believe when they tell you, they pat you on the head and say, we know how it all formed. Don't believe them. They're lying to you. They don't have a naturalistic explanation for creation.
So get out your baloney detector and have it ready.
And the baloney detector. All right. So, Fred, we are out of time.
Well,
how did that happen?
I know. We got to tell them real quick, though, about The Hobbit.
The Hobbit.
Yeah. They thought that this was a, you know, when they first found it, they thought it was a human ancestor. Then they said it was a separate species called Homo floresiensis.
That was on an island in Indonesia.
Yeah, and they said it was 18,000 years old, but there's a problem with that. What was the problem?
Well, there's a scientist, a paleo, he's a paleopathologist, and he's studying the teeth. He took photos of the teeth, and he said it looks like one of the teeth had a molar that was filled by a dentist in the 1930s.
Wow.
And so some other scientists said, well, that might be true. And he said, I can settle this in minutes just by looking at the fossil. And he's a scientist from university in South Australia. They will not, and he's an evolutionist. They will not allow him. He took the photos himself.
Yep.
And he said, I think this is a filling from a dentist. They will not allow him. He said it could be settled in minutes. They won't allow him to look at the fossil.
Oh, yeah, they won't allow. Yep.
It's funny, isn't it?
It is.
Hobbit. All right. Fred Williams, thanks for joining us. Bob and Your Live, KGov.com, and Maranatha. What a great school. Maranatha.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Sure.
The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.